Good morning, everyone. So today we shall begin our reading of Book 7, the Book of Yoga. Usually when we begin a new canto, we read it through around the group from the beginning to the end. And this is not a very long canto, so I think we can do that this morning. This canto one is called The Joy of Union, The Ordeal of the Foreknowledge of Death, and the Heart's Grief and Pain. In this book 7, the book of Savitri's Yoga, there are seven cantos. This is the first one. It tells of how Savitri's marriage procession goes to the home of Satyavan and his parents, and they leave her there. The joy of union, the joy of being with Satyavan, but then also the ordeal of the foreknowledge of death. Of course, Satyavan and his parents do not know, but Savitri knows that on a certain date, about a year ahead, Satyavan must die. And she has to live with that knowledge and prepare for that day. So this is the first canto, which shows us, we can say, Savitri in her humanity, enjoying the bliss of union, battling with the ordeal of the foreknowledge of death and the heart's grief and pain. And then she has to start her yoga, which is described in the other six cantos of this book. So we'll read through the first canto and then come back to the beginning and look at it in more detail. You'll begin, please, Margaret.
The joy of union, the ordeal of the foreknowledge of death, and the heart's grief and pain. Fate followed her foreseen, immutable road. Man's hopes and longings built the journeying wheels that bear the body of his destiny and lead his blind will towards an unknown goal. His fate within him shapes his acts and rules. Its face and form already are born in him. Its parentage is in his secret soul. Here matter seems to move, the body's life, and the soul follows where its nature drives. Nature and fate compel his free will's choice. But greater spirits, this balance can reverse and makes the soul the artist of its fate. This is a mystic truth our ignorance hides. Doom is a passage for our inborn force. Our ordeal is a hidden spirit's choice. Ananta is our being's own decree.
Thank you.
All was fulfilled. The path of self-free, our seed and adamant, passionate and calm, attrition and understands unbending world, forced to its issue, the long cosmic curve. Once more she sat behind the loud hastening hoofs, a speed of armor's quiver and a voice, far away of the chariots, bore her on the horn. The cushion of earth awakened in its down knees, looked up at her from the vast endurance. He is watering in a bright head, large and hands that lulled at him between the sun of heaven, region on region, spacious in the sun. He is like a chrysalis in the white blaze and yellow river, passing like a fireman. Yet, the marshes and more line, a happy home to iron fastnesses and austere peaks and titan solitudes. Once more was near the fair and fatal place, the borders gleaming with rose delight, where first she met the face of Satyavan, and so, like one waking in a dream, some timeless beauty and reality, the moon rose sweetness of heaven's earth for a child.
Thank you. Helmut.
The past receded and the future neared. Far now behind lay Madras' spacious halls, the white carved pillars, the cool dim alcoves, the tinged mosaic of the crystal floors, the towered pavilions, the wind-rippled pools and gardens humming with the murmur of bees. Forgotten soon, or a pale memory, the fountain splash in the white stone-bound pool. The thoughtful moon hides brooding solemn trace. The colonnades gleam gray in the quiet eve. The slow moonrise gliding in front of night. Left far behind their marble faces known. The happy silken babble on laughter's lips, and the close clinking clasp of intimate hands, and adoration's light and cherished eyes offered to the one sovereign of their life.
Thank you. Takeshi, Audrey.
Nature's primeval loneliness was here. Here only was the voice of bird and beast. The ascetics exiled in the dim soul huge in human forests far from cheerful sound of man's life, converse, and his quiet days. In a brown eve with one red eye of cloud, through a narrow opening a green flower cut out of the stair of sky and soil they came into a mighty home of emerald dust. There onward led by a faint brooding path, which tore through the shadow of enormous trunks and on the arches mysteries of sunshine, they saw low thatched roofs of a hermitage, huddled beneath a patch of azure hue, in the sunlight clearing that seemed the outfit, or the glass smile in the forest's monstrous heart. A root refuge of the far world of man, watched by the crowding giants of the moon. Arriving that rock hewn homestead, they question no more the strangeness of their fate. Their pride and love run to the great blind chief, a regal pillar of fallen mountains, and the stately, careworn woman, once of whom, who now hope nothing for herself and life, but all things only hope for her one child, calling on that single head and partial fate, all joy of earth, all heaven's blood.
Thank you.
Adoring wisdom and beauty like a young god, she saw him loved by heaven as by herself. She rejoiced in his brightness and believed in his fate, and knew not of the evil drawing near. Lingering some days upon the forest verge, like man who lengthened out departure's pain, unwilling to separate sorrowful clinging hands, unwilling to see for the last time a fate, heavy with the sorrow of a coming day, and wondering at the carelessness of fate, he breaks with idle hands her supreme words. They parted from her with painful burden hearts, as forced by an inescapable fate in part, and one whom we shall never see again. Driven by the singularity of her fate, helpless against the choice of savage's heart, they left her to her rapture and her doom, in a tremendous voice savage shame.
Charge.
All was behind her that was once her life, all welcome that henceforth was his hers. She abode in Sabulon in the wild woods. Priceless, she deemed her joy so close to him. A part of his love, she lived for love alone, as if self-poised from both the march of days. Her immobile spirit watched the haste of time, a statue of passion and invincible force, an absolutism of sweet, imperious will, and tranquility, and a violence of the gods, indomitable and immutable.
Thank you.
At first, but beneath the sapphire's heaven, the sylvan solitude was a gorgeous dream, and hunter of summer splendor and fire. The sky-topped flower hung palace of the gods, and all its sins a smile of rapture's lips, and all its voices hearts of happiness. There was a chanting in the casual wind, there was a glory in the least sunbeam, lined for this crystal's face in velvet robe. In resting darkness or moonlight deep, day was purple pageant and a hymn, a wave of the laughter of light from morn to eve. His absence was a dream of memory, his presence was the empire of God, a fusing of the joys, heart and heaven. A tumultuous blaze of a nuptial rapture past, a rushing of two spirits to be one, burning of two bodies in one flame. Opened by the gates of unforgettable bliss, two lives were locked within an earthly heaven, and fate and grief fled from the fiery hour.
Thank you. Marianne.
But soon now fell the summer's ardent breath, and throngs of blue-black clouds crept through the sky, and rain fled sobbing over the drooping leaves, and storm became the forest's titan voice. Then, listening to the thunder's fatal crash, and the fugitive, pattering footsteps of the showers, and the long, unsatisfied panting of the wind, and sorrow muttering in the sun-vexed night, the grief of all the world came near to her. Night's darkness seemed a future's ominous space. The shadow of a lover's doom arose, and fear laid hands upon her mortal heart. Moments swift and ruthless list, alarmed a thought, the mind remembered Nard's date. The trembling moon accompanied of her riches, she reckoned insufficient days between. The dire expectancy knocked at her breast, dreadful to her though the footstep of their hours. Grief came, she passionate stranger to her gate, vanished when in his arms, out of a sleep, it rose at morn to look into her face. Vainly she fled into abysm of bliss from a pursuing foresight of the end. The more she plunged into love that anguish grew, the deepest grief beat from sweetest gulf awards. Remembrance was a poignant band she felt. Each day a golden leaf torn coolly out from her to strain the book of love and joy.
Thank you. Mihong.
Thus swaying in strong gusts of happiness, and swimming in foreboding somber waves, and feeling sorrow and terror with her heart. For now they set among her bosom's guests, all in her inner chamber, paced apart. Her eyes stared. Her eyes stared blind into the future's night. Out of her separate self, she looked and saw, moving amid the unconscious faces loved. In mind a stranger, though in heart so near, the ignorant smiling world go happily by upon its way towards an unknown doom, and wondered at the careless lives of men. As if in different worlds they walked, they considered of the returning sun. They wrapped in liquid hourly hopes and tasks. She, in her dreadful knowledge, was alone.
Thank you. Sergei.
The rich and happy secrecy that once enshrined her as if in a silver hour, apart from the brightness of thoughts and dreams, imagined for treasure hours of solitude. And lonely grief that none could share or know, the body seemed to end to sooner joy, and the fragile happiness of this mortal love. A quiet visage, still and sweet and calm, her graceful daily hands were now a mask. In vain she looked upon her death to find the ground of stillness and the spirit's peace. Still rose from her birth a silent being within, who sees life's drama pass with unmoved eyes, supports the sorrow of the mind and heart, and bears in human breasts her word and faith. A glimpse of fleshy skin, the presence was sweet. Only her violent heart and patiently repulsed in front of the immutable door. Defenseless, new, bound to her human love, they had no means to help, no way to save. This she controlled. Nothing was shown outside. She was still to them the child they knew and loved. The sovereign woman they saw not within.
Thank you.
No change was in her beautiful motions seen. A worshipped empress, all once vied to serve, she made herself the diligent serf of all, nor spared the labor of broom and jar and well, or close gentle tending, or to heat the fire of altar and kitchen. No slight task allowed to others that her woman's strength might do. In all her acts a strange divinity shone. Into a simplest movement she could bring a oneness with earth's glowing robe of light, a lifting up of common acts by love. All love was hers, and its one heavenly cord bound all to all with her as golden tie. But when her grief to the surface pressed too close, these things, once gracious adjuncts of her joy, seemed meaningless to her, a gleaming shell, or were around mechanical and void, her body's actions shared not by her will. Always behind this strange divided life, her spirit, like a sea of living fire, possessed her lover, and to his body clung, one locked embrace, to guard its threatened me.
Thank you. Bridget, would you read?
At night she walked through the slow, silent hours, brooding on the treasure of his bosom and face, hung o'er the sleep-bound beauty of his brow, or laid her burning cheek upon his feet. Waking at morn, her lips endlessly clung to his, unwillingly ever to separate again, or lose that honey-drained of lingering joy, unwilling to lose his body from her breast. The warm, inadequate signs that love must use, intolerant of the poverty of time, her passion catching at the fugitive hours, will the expanse of centuries in one day, of prodigal love and the surf of ecstasy. Or else she strove, even in mortal time, to build a little room of timelessness by the deep union of two human lives, her soul secluded shut in his soul. After all was given, she demanded still, even by his strong embrace unsatisfied, she longed to cry, O tender Satyavan, O lover of my soul, give more of love, while yet thou canst, to her lust. Imprint thyself of every nerve to keep that thrills to be the message of my heart. For soon we part, and who shall know how long, before the great queen in its monstrous round restore us to each other and our love.
Thank you. Ellen?
When she loved to speak a great free work and lay the burden on his happy head, she pressed the out-surging deep web into her breast to dwell within silent, unhelped, alone. But Satyavan sometimes half understood, or felt at least with the uncertain answer of our soul-planted hearts and unuttered need, the unplumbed abyss in of a deep passion born. All of his bleeding days, the cheap he could spare from labor in the forest hewing wood and hunting food in the wild sea and lakes, and services to his father's sightless life. he gave to her and helped to increase the hours by the nearness of his presence and his clasp, and lavish softness of heart-seeking word, and the flows beating faith of hearts and heart.
Thank you. Manoha.
All was too little for her bottomless need. If in his presence she forgot a while, grief filled its absence with its aching touch. She saw the desert of her coming days imaged in every solitary hour. Although with a vain imaginary bliss of fire union through death's door of escape, she dreamed of her body robed in funeral flame. She knew she must not clutch the happiness to die with him and follow, seizing his rope, across our other countries, travelers left into the sweet and horrible beyond. For those sad parents still would need her here to help the empty remnant of their day. Often it seemed to her the age's pain had pressed their quintessence into a single womb, concentrating in her a tortured world.
Thank you. Prince.
Thus, the silent chamber of her soul, cloistering her love to lift the secret grief, she dwelt like a dumb priest with hidden gods, unappeased by the worldless offering of her grace, lifting to them her sorrow like fountains, her life the altar, herself the sacrifice. Yet ever they grow into each other more, until it seemed no power could rend the part, since even the body's walls could not divide. For then he wandered in the forest, oft her conscious spirit walked the scene and knew his actions as if in herself he moved. He, less aware, thrilled with her from afar. Always the stature of her passion grew. Grief, fear became the food of mighty love. Increased by its torment, it filled the whole world. It was all her life, become her whole earth and heaven. Also life born, an infant of the hours, immortal it walked, unsliable as the gods. Her spirit stretched measureless in strength divine, an anvil for the blows of fate and time, or tired of sorrow's passionate luxury. Grief's self became calm, dull-eyed, resolute, awaiting some issue of its fiery struggle, some deed in which it might forever cease, victorious over itself and death and tears.
Thank you. Alice, you read the last bit.
Year now paused upon the brink of change. No more the storms sailed with stupendous wings and thunder strode in wrath across the world. But still was heard a muttering in the sky, and rain dripped wearily through the mournful air, and gray, slow drifting clouds shut in the earth. So her gray sky shut in her heart. A still self hid behind, but gave no light. No voice came down from the forgotten. Only in the privacy of its brooding pain, the human heart even spoke to the body's
Thank you. Praveen, you'd read the first 10 lines, please. Yeah.
Fate followed her foreseen, immutable road. Man's hopes and longings bear the journeying wheels that bear the body of his destiny, and he is blind towards an unknown goal. spirit within him shapes his acts and moves. Its face and form already are born in him. Its parentage is in his secret soul. Here matter seems to mold the body's life, and the soul follows as nature drives. Nature and fate compel his free will's choice.
Thank you. I should have asked you to read the next two lines also. Will you read them?
But greater spirits, this balance can reverse and make the soul the artist of its fate.
Thank you. So this is a matter of fate, Savitri's fate. That she's made her choice. And so everything follows this foreseen immutable road. And Sri Aurobindo makes a general comment for us human beings that our hopes and our longings, our wishes and wants and desires, these build the wheels which carry the body of our destiny. These are the things which lead our will, which is blind, which doesn't have the vision of the future, towards an unknown goal. But all this is being shaped by our fate within us. It's already there, coded into us. That's what shapes our actions, rules our feelings and wishes. That fate has been born with us. Its face and form already are born when we are born. But the parents of this fate, this parentage, is in the secret soul. It's not really in the blind will and in the action. Something, some choice has been with us from the beginning. So here it seems as if the circumstances of matter shape the life of the body, and the soul just has to follow whatever nature decides. Nature is the driver of the chariot. So the combination of these two, nature and fate, compel the choice of what we think is our free will. But he says, but greater spirits can reverse this balance, so that the soul within can become the artist of its fate. Mother says that she thinks this is what is worth doing in our lifetime, to become the master of our fate instead of being driven by circumstances and nature. Sorry?
How would we know that what we decide is not the fate that was there already?
It is, yes.
I take this to mean that the soul all along has decided the destiny. But until you have realized your soul, all you're aware of is your nature. So then you feel your nature is driving you. But all along, the soul is allowing that to go. You go through that suffering until finally you call out to the Supreme, help me. If you exist, how many people have prayed, oh God, if you exist, please help me. So then it starts to turn. But he says the parentage is in the soul, so all along
the parentage is in the soul. But this doesn't mean that the full control is with the soul. As long as we are in our natural process of evolution and the soul identifies with nature and accepts the promptings of nature, then it can't be the artist, the conscious artist of its fate.
We keep falling back into the side of nature. We have to get back to the side of soul.
Yes. But he says greater natures those who have developed and evolved further in their inner and outer life, they can reverse this balance. The soul can begin to rule the nature, become the artist of its fate. Otherwise, we have to trust to that destiny within, whatever it is.
And that nature is matter, and our mind, or
body. Yes, mind, life, and body, this combination.
And the environment we're in.
Yes, yes.
But I think it's not, to me it's not so clear exactly what he means by fate.
Ah, yes.
You know, because Fowl is the foreseen immutable world. But Chinyin says it's within. I don't know, is that
the
soul, or is it for the nature, or both?
Didn't Narad say something about this? No, he said, the things that happen to you are not your fate. It's your soul's choice that is your fate, really.
I looked up in the dictionary once the word fate.
What does it say?
So on one hand, it is doom. You say, I'm fated to have an accident or to die.
Yes.
But the other meaning is destiny. And destiny I take to be a pure thing, which is the divine plan for a person's life, which can, in my view, cannot be changed. It's written in the book of Brigu or wherever. So, anyway, I like to think that way. It's very comforting.
Yes.
But the thing is that way you can feel that all of the vicissitudes of your life are necessities.
Contributing to the fulfillment of this.
If you lose money or you lose a person close to you, whatever, it is a necessary thing, and then you don't have to feel sorry. Mm.
So if you have a look on page 458, there we have Narad's description of what... towards the bottom third, line 769. O man, the events that meet thee on thy road, though they smite thy body and soul with joy and grief, are not thy fate. They touch thee a while and pass. Even death can cut not short thy spirit's walk. Thy goal, the road thou choosest, are thy fate. And then he says, on the altar of sacrifice, throwing thy thoughts, thy heart, thy works, thy fate is a long sacrifice to the gods, to the cosmic powers, to nature, till they have opened to thee thy secret self and made thee one with the indwelling God. And then the soul can become artist of its fate.
So, as a human general, as a human entity, not individual, or just individual, but the fate is to dwell, to be a oneness with the God. This is our fate, according to this line.
He says to be one with the indwelling God, so it means that divine part of yourself, the eternal part that has accepted to be part of this evolutionary adventure, to go through this long cycle. And for a whole long time in the early stages of that, the soul accepts to be subject to nature, to follow the line of nature's evolution and all the vicissitudes and circumstances. But all those vicissitudes and circumstances secretly are leading one to that point where you become conscious of who you really are and what your choice is and what your mission is. And then you can become the artist of your fate. Before that, it's something, your fate is something hidden within you, coded into you, that's guiding you whenever it can, whenever nature allows.
The soul becomes the artist of its fate when it surrenders to the Divine Mother, right?
Or when it becomes one with the indwelling God, yes. Mm. Yeah.
But this passage on 458, he actually describes all the aspects of fate.
Yes.
Huh? How it's doomed, how it's a balance. That's a curious line, a balance drawn in destiny's book.
Yes.
Maybe that tells you that's where you're at right now. That's your accounts at the present time.
Yes, that's what he says. Your fate is a transaction done at every hour between nature and thy soul. It's a kind of balance, no? And God,
if you're not in union with the soul, it's going to seem like a doom. Mm. Otherwise, it's going to seem like a grace. That's how I interpret this.
And God is the one who decides whether nature will prevail or whether soul will prevail.
Yeah. And then
but he says you don't have to accept the things that happen to you. Man can accept his fate in that sense of what happens to you. No? But he can refuse it. And even if the one says, oh, those terrible things have to happen to you, he writes your refusal in your credit page. You build up some credit for the time when you will become in control.
That's why the mind can't understand it, because it's both fixed and free at the same time.
Yes.
And number 780, line 780, thy spirit's fate is a battle and ceaseless march against invisible opponent power.
Well, all of us who've accepted to come into this material world, that's our spirit's fate. That's this battle and ceaseless march, and that goes on and on, no?
But when you have the soul's